Our reading this morning
comes from the book of 1 John, as we continue in our series. We have got to chapter 2, which is our second week, and I'm reading from 1 John 2, verses 3 to 11. We know that we have come to know him, that is God, if we keep his commands. Those who say, I know him, but do not do what he commands, are liars, and the truth is not in them. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. Dear friends, I am not writing you a new command, but an old one, which you have had since the beginning. This old command is the message you have heard. Yet I am writing you a new command. Its truth is seen in him and in you, because the darkness is passing and the true light is already shining. Those who claim to be in the light but hate a fellow believer are still in the darkness. Those who love their fellow believers live in the light, and there is nothing in them to make them stumble. But those who hate a fellow believer are in the darkness and walk around in the darkness. They do not know where they are going because the darkness has blinded them. As we continue to look at the letter of 1 John, we're reminded that last week we looked at the temptation of living double lives before God. How sometimes we profess one thing and then we act in a completely different way to what we say. And how that now God has appeared and come into our life, bringing his future life into the present. There's no need, in fact, there's no way that we can lead double lives because God is light. And in him there is no darkness at all. And his light exposes our lives for what they really are. So we can't live double lives before him. And you know, in a sense, as we enter the second chapter of 1 John, we continue along the same theme. In fact, a lot of the book of 1 John seems to repeat itself. There are elements which talk about saying doing one thing and saying another, but also the theme kind of moves along a little bit. It does change slightly, because instead of talking about sin and forgiveness as we were last week and the new life that we can have in Jesus, John instead is now talking about obedience and how this new life with God is made real in obedience to him. It reminds me of that famous story about there was a ship going along one night and it was very dark and very foggy, and the captain of the ship was straining his eyes to see if there was anything ahead of him, anything coming towards him. He was very vigilant, and suddenly his worst fears were realised when he saw a light in the distance, a bright light. And it appeared to be another vessel which was on a collision course with him. And so he radioed the oncoming vessel and he says, "This is Captain Smith. Please alter your course 10 degrees to the south. Over." And to the captain's amazement, the foggy image just continued straight towards him. And then there was another message coming back to him on the radio. "Captain Smith, this is Private Johnson. Please alter your course 10 degrees north. Over." Well, the captain was appalled by this message, and so he shouted back over the radio, "Private Johnson, this is Captain Smith. I order you immediately to change your course 10 degrees south. Over." And he continued to watch as the light didn't move an inch. And then the radio call came, "With all due respect, Captain Smith, I order you to alter your course 10 degrees north." The captain was angry, frustrated. This was a breach of rules. How dare this happen? So he said, "Private, I can have you court-martialed. This is the last time I'm commanding you to change your course. We are on collision. I am a battleship. You need to move." And then came the chilling transmission, "Captain Smith, once again, all due respect, I command you to move because I am a lighthouse." And, you know, it's that kind of thing that we think about when we think about obedience. It's that talk of having to do something which we don't really want to do, but we have to. Either because the person who's
asking us to do something is stronger than us and we need to obey them, or because it's for the greater good. Obedience, if you like, is something that we would rather not do, but we can see the need for it. It's not a desire that we have. And as we move into the second chapter of John, this is the tone in which it seems to start, because John begins by saying, we know we've come to know God if we keep his commands. A sentence which immediately brings up images of the Ten Commandments, those unmoving things in the Bible. The reminder of Moses and the Old Testament and the commandments that were written in stone. God's overarching, unbending rules handed down to the Israelites. Which for many creates this feeling today of a sense of restriction, which lots of people see as part of following God. Thou shalt not do this. Thou shalt not do that. It's a negative image that surrounds God's commandments. And this isn't really helped by the second line of this reading today, which goes on to say that those who say, I know him, those who say, I know God, but do not do what he commands, are liars, and the truth is not in them. We know we've come to know him if we keep his commands, but those who say, I don't know him, and do not do what he commands, are liars, and the truth is not in them. Two lines which back up the traditional images of obedience. You shall do this, and if you don't, if you fail, you have no truth in you. Many of us were brought up with these images to see God as an overarching rule keeper who kept tabs on how we lived our lives. And so for John to enforce these images is a bit of a shame, especially following on from last week when he was at pains to point out to people who would read this letter that he had seen Jesus, that he had met Jesus, that he had touched Jesus, and that in Jesus the new life of God had finally arrived. It was a life full of light and love and freedom and forgiveness, and it was one that overflowed with an invitation to join the way of God and know continual forgiveness in our lives. So to suddenly change and focus on unbending obedience with seemingly no way back if we make mistakes seems a little out of character for a letter which started so differently. And yet as we continue reading, John again seems to change his tone. He's still talking about obedience, but this time he focuses on old commandments and new commandments. He says that what he's actually writing here is not new, but old. It's an old commandment, if you like, meaning those that were handed down from God long ago, the Ten Commandments and those like them. But he also says he's writing a new commandment as well, which in some ways ties into the old, but which only came about in Jesus Christ when he arrived and brought his future life into the world, which seems all a bit confusing. But also, maybe for some of us, and certainly for many of the readers of the day, brings to mind Jesus' summation of the Ten Commandments when he was challenged by the Pharisees to reveal what the greatest commandment was. And he said this, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbour as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. Jesus summed up the old commandments in a new way when he came. Or if you like, the Ten Commandments, the overarching obedience to God that we have been taught is so strict and unbending, was actually summed up by Jesus in one word, and that was love. Love for God and love for each other. The new commandment of love. And so when John writes about obedience here in the second chapter of his letter, he's not talking about a tick box of rules which we have to obey, or an unbending list of things to do, or a never-ending problem that we cannot solve. He's not talking about something we have to obey or else. He's talking about a way of living, a lifestyle, if you like, a new way of life which is lived under Jesus. Or as he puts it in verse 5, this is how we know we're in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. Not obeying rules, but living a new life made available in Jesus Christ. A lifestyle of love. And, you know, really, I guess this idea is not that unusual for us. Not necessarily the lifestyle of love, but the idea of living different lifestyles. Because we often live different lifestyles at different times of our life and for different reasons. You know, it might be that we go on a diet for a time and we change our lifestyle because we want to lose weight and this is how we do it. Or it might be that in certain times of the year, especially leading up to Christmas, we get addicted to certain programmes on the television that are on every single Saturday, and we change our lifestyle because we want to watch them, we want to see who wins, and we want to see what happens. Or maybe a little bit more seriously, we're told we've got a health risk and we need to change the way we live so that our risk will go down. And so we adopt a different lifestyle, because we're told we need to. It's not unusual for people to live different lifestyles. If we're serious about something, it's vital that we do it. You know, I'm very aware that in a couple of weeks, or maybe even a week, Wimbledon fortnight begins. Now, I'm sure there must be some tennis fans in here. Yes. Oh, good, at least two. Brilliant. I knew if I mentioned football, that would be bad. But tennis, we might be okay. Now, you know, if you're a fan, you might buy the paper a bit more or get a magazine, or you might listen to the radio if you have time in the day, and when you get home at night, you'll put the telly on and see what's happening. But if you're a real proper fan who has dedicated their life to tennis, for these 2 weeks, your lifestyle will change. You'll buy all the magazines available on Wimbledon fortnight. You'll make sure you get every bit of information that you can. You'll take time off work, maybe. Some people take 2 weeks holiday to watch the Wimbledon fortnight. Maybe you'll travel to London and you'll queue overnight on the pavements for those tickets. Or you might queue outside waiting for autographs. If you can't do that, you probably set up your chair in the right position so that you can see every detail of all that's happening. Your lifestyle will change because tennis will be the all-important thing. And so you'll work around that. Do you know, it's a little bit like I'm pregnant at the moment. Don't know whether you've noticed. I know, she's so slim. I don't know whether you've noticed. But you see, if I were to say, oh, I'm only pregnant, so I don't need to do a lot. Maybe I'll go to the doctor once and I might take a few vitamins. Doesn't really work, does it? But if I'm serious, I change my lifestyle. I'm expecting a baby, so I'll have to go to all the appointments that I'm told to go to check things are okay. I need to change the way I live my life. Maybe I need to rest a bit more. Maybe I need to eat different foods. I will avoid certain activities and certain foods. I'll have 10 million blood samples taken because I should. I'll have scans done because that's what you do. I'll do everything I can to prepare myself and my body for the arrival of a new baby and my home. I haven't quite got that for you. But I'll try all these things because I want the best for this baby. So I change the lifestyle to one that fits in, which is with what is happening at the time. And we all do it from time to time with various different things. But interestingly, when it comes to Christianity, when it comes to following Jesus Christ, we suddenly find a change of lifestyle very difficult. To the point where we often reduce following God down to a set of do's and don'ts, a tick box list which we can never achieve. So ultimately, we can end up feeling useless, hopeless, disillusioned with following God. We end up, if you like, like the Gnostics who were challenging the way of the time that John was writing to, who saw following God as an academic exercise to investigate God, a way of trying to work out what God was like while living a completely different life. Which is why, following on from last week, John says the only way to follow this new life of God that has broken into our world is not to reduce it to a set of rules we have to obey, but to live a life of love like Jesus. And not only that, but the only way you will know you're living a life of love like him is if you also love each other. He says, those who claim to be in the light but hate a fellow believer are still in darkness and walk in darkness. They do not know where they are going because the darkness has blinded them. You see, just as we can turn Christianity into a set of rules and obedience and try and make it work, we can also live Christianity in isolation. And, you know, however much we would like to do this, and however much sometimes we think it would be a lot easier to live Christianity in isolation, the only way we are going to know we're truly living the lifestyle of Jesus is if we live it together. You know, we can spend hours reading the Bible, praying, singing Christian songs, meditating on the Word of God, doing the things that help develop our relationship. But unless we live our lives of love before each other, we're never really going to know whether our lifestyle has changed or not. You know, someone once said to me, what is inside of us only spills out when we bump up against one another. What is inside only spills out when we bump up against one another. And this is true. We see it in families, we see it with friends, we see it with work colleagues, but we also see it in church. You know, sometimes when we bump up against each other, that wonderful lifestyle of love pours out. But other times, as I'm sure we've all experienced, when we bump up against one another, a lot of other things pour out, which we really don't want to. And that's why John writes as he does today. Because really, it's only when we're with each other, it's only when we're around other believers that God can really develop us and change us and help us to grow. Because Christianity was never designed to be lived in isolation. And whatever people say today, it's never a faith that can be lived without meeting together with other people who believe similar things. This wasn't the lifestyle of Jesus. He didn't come to earth and spend his whole time praying on his own. He came to earth and he chose his disciples and he lived with them and he shared life with them. And so if we're to live as Jesus lived, we must live lives of love together, not on our own. We must care for each other. We must pray for each other. We must sit with each other. Even when we desperately want a coffee and we're thinking of other things. We need to break out of our groups that we're comfortable in and talk to people we don't know and get to know each other. We need to ask for help, offer help, make ourselves vulnerable before each other so that people will see our lives. We need to not treat Sunday as a morning we go to church because we're being obedient to God. But we go because we want to be together before God. And when we do this, when we get into this lifestyle of living together and living as Jesus did, we will not only be changed, but we will at the very least be challenged to change. And God will finally be able to move among us as he wishes to do. Or as John said, those who love their fellow believers live in light. And there is nothing in them to make them stumble.